Good morning. You are listening to Raven Radio. Today is Friday, April 19th, 2013. I'm Holly Keene, and this is Raven News. As we reported last week, whooping cough in Alaska is on the rise. The bacterial infection is extremely contagious and has seen a dramatic increase in cases since last year. In early March, an infant in western Alaska died of the disease, which is also known as pertussis. KCAW's Ann Bryce spoke with Alaska State Epidemiologist. He talked about how to prevent the infection and why rates are so high in Alaska.
Since January, over 130 cases of whooping cough, or pertussis, have already been reported in Alaska. State epidemiologist Dr. Joe McLaughlin says pertussis tends to follow a cyclical pattern. Every 2 or 3 years, the Pacific Northwest and the rest of the U.S. will experience an uptick in cases.
So we're only in April, and we're already looking at 131 cases. Now, last year was 2012 represented a huge uptick in the number of cases compared to previous years. So our total for 2012 was 355. And so the 2012 epidemic is carrying into 2013 here in Alaska.
Compare those numbers to 2011, when there were only 24 cases, and the year before, when there were only 45. McLaughlin says the highly contagious infection spreads through the respiratory pathway.
What happens is when somebody is acutely ill with pertussis, they're often, sneezing and coughing, and they'll have runny nose, and those respiratory secretions contain the bacteria, the Bordetella pertussis bacteria that causes pertussis.
And when the bacteria gets into your respiratory system, it damages cilia, or the finger-like projections in your upper respiratory tract. That's what causes the initial symptoms of pertussis. He says there are many ways to avoid contracting pertussis. First and foremost, get vaccinated. Number two, wash your hands frequently.
Because, those respiratory secretions can easily be on another person's hand. If you shake their hand, they can be on doorknobs, they can be on tables and chairs, things that we commonly touch. And then if we touch our noses or mouth, they can get into our system that way.
Also, he says it's a good idea to keep an eye on the hygiene of those around you by making sure they're covering their coughs and sneezes.
Usually we recommend coughing or sneezing into an elbow if you've got a sleeved shirt on or a handkerchief or something like that, and as soon as you do, to wash your hands.
He says the best way to prevent pertussis infection is by getting a vaccine. Infants are at the highest risk for hospitalization and death. He also says that over time, immunity to pertussis wanes. So for kids who have had the vaccine as part of their normal list of immunizations, their immunity is high, but doctors have recently seen an increase in pertussis cases in adolescents and adults who have already been vaccinated.
So it could be that in the near future, the CDC and the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practice may decide to go ahead and recommend another booster shot of Tdap vaccine. We're still waiting to see what CDC recommends on that.
McLaughlin says that immunization coverage rates are low in Alaska, and that it's one of the biggest contributors to the high rates of pertussis infection. He says that some people don't get vaccines because they fear risk of serious side effects, but he says the risk is small compared to what could happen if you contract pertussis.
Severe vaccine reactions are exceedingly rare. And the risk of death if your child is unvaccinated is much higher than any risk of a severe vaccine reaction.
Reporting in Sitka, I'm Ann Bryce.
That was Alaska State Epidemiologist Dr. Joe McLaughlin talking about the rise of whooping cough in the state. Next week, we will explore some of the reasons behind vaccine hesitancy. Alaska's House Minority Leader is calling this session the worst ever. Representative Beth Krutula says there were a few bright spots, but overall she says she's frustrated and angry about much of what lawmakers did this year, especially the majority's decision to cut oil taxes. Krutula is a Democrat from Juneau. In the KCAW listening area, her district includes Tenneke Springs. Matt Lichtenstein has more.
For House Republicans, who have a three-quarters majority, it was an incredible session. Here's some of what Majority Leader Lance Pruitt of Anchorage had to say the day after adjournment.
And it's just been a dynamic year. I look forward to being able to tell my kids years from now that I was a part of the legislature that did the things that we did today, or did in this session.
Most prominently, majority lawmakers changed the tax structure, called Alaska's Clear and Equitable Share, or ACES, to provide billions in tax cuts for oil companies. Supporters say the changes are aimed at encouraging more oil development in Alaska. However, they've also likened the chances of that happening to a crapshoot. Opponents, such as House Minority Leader Beth Kurtula, believe the impacts to the state's bottom line will be devastating.
I think history will show that this was the worst session and that the oil tax giveaway is going to be the worst problem the state faces.
Kurtula is one of the sponsors of an effort to get a citizens' referendum on the ballot to overturn the oil tax cuts.
The history of our state is one of people coming in and taking our resources and leaving. It's been the gold and the copper and the fish and the fur, and we can't let that happen with the oil. It's our constitutional duty to mandate the benefit to our state, and we've just done this without one shred of evidence or guarantee that we're going to have more production or that we're going to have a benefit for Alaska.
Kurtula is also frustrated that lawmakers failed to pass a long-term plan for education funding. Just at the end of the session, they added a one-time injection of $21 million for school security, energy relief, and other fixed costs. She says that's not enough.
What I want to see is an overall plan of how we reduce class size, we put the money back into the classroom, and we do it on a consistent, dependable way, rather than just this a pittance here, a pittance there, at the last second, you know, pulling money out of something else so that we can throw it at, you know, either transportation, which, yeah, those are high costs, all right, or energy, yeah, that's right, but you can't do just that.
Kurtula says she's proud that the 12-member bipartisan Bush caucus joined with the House minority in opposing a measure that could pave the way for a school voucher system in Alaska. Senate Joint Resolution 9 remains in committee. It seeks voter approval for a constitutional amendment to allow the use of public funds to help pay tuition for students in private schools.
I don't have any problem with a family saying we want to pay for or have our children go into private school. But that isn't even realistic in rural Alaska, even if you wanted to do it. So if this voucher system happens, it's a real undermining of public education, particularly in rural Alaska.
Kurtula was glad lawmakers also held up a measure Governor Sean Parnell proposed to streamline the state's permitting process for development.
House Bill 77, which would change permitting in Alaska and would also allow the government to take away people's filings for water rights, was held up in the Senate and I think killed. And that happened because of the dedication of quite a few, even former legislators, who came in and said, this just can't happen. You can't turn it over wholesale like that. There's too many issues about what happens to people's rights, their ability to a public process. And we saw a number of bills like that that were coming through very quickly.
And Kurtula says she was relieved at the end of the session that a House and Senate conference committee restored $550,000 that had earlier been cut from the Alaska Department of Fish and Game's Southeast Port Sampling Program, which is used to manage the region's salmon fisheries. In Petersburg, I'm Matt Lichtenstein.
Alexis Will, a graduate student at the University of Alaska Fairbanks, calls herself a ninja of the night, but it has nothing to do with the martial arts. Will is a biologist who studies the foraging behavior of the rhinoceros auklet, a seabird which returns to land only once every 24 hours during Alaska's short summer nights. Although it was not part of her research, Will also captured sounds as thousands of nesting pairs of rhinos, murres, storm petrels, and other birds descended on St. Lazaria every evening. She sent this audio postcard.
So the way the night goes on the island, it starts off and the rhinos come in right at dusk. One of the recordings has gulls in the background, and so you're hearing these really obnoxious gulls. They're really loud. The really low mooing is the rhinos as they start to come in, and I think there's a couple crashes that happen too. And there'll be this really short period of time where they'll be mooing in kind of these waves where they are really excited about getting back and either are just standing around mooing, or they'll also moo when they get into their burrow. they pretty quickly get drowned out by storm petrels. So that's the ones that go doo-doo-doo-doo and are squawking. And then usually about an hour before dawn, the rhinos start coming out of their burrows and socializing, and that's when they really start mooing. And that one is where you have the really, really, really loud mooing, and then there's a couple doo-doo-doo-doos tossed in there from the storm petrels. That's my favorite time of night, is when I can make it to right before dawn, because they get out, and then as the light starts coming back, the petrels die down, and then it's just these waves of these moos that kind of sweep across the whole colony. All these seabirds, while they aren't adapted to terrestrial life at all, and some of them, MERS are a really good example, they're, you know, on the cusp of being completely marine. You know, they incubate their eggs for like 30 days, raise a chick in about 2 weeks, and then they're back to the ocean. Rhinos have a lot longer time on land, but all that said, it's the most important part of their life cycle, right, because that's when they're passing on their genes to the next generation. I just need a bird that has fish so that I know it's a breeder, but I don't need to catch it again. I just need it for that one sample. And then for the fledglings, most of them I catch with a sort of a small landing net, but I have managed to grab a couple. As long as you sneak up on them, they're pretty clueless. You know, they're wandering around kind of very new to the world, I guess. And so you'll see them just kind of wandering back and forth, and if you startle them, they'll disappear, but as long as you can sneak up on them, they're not as quick as the adults are.
And that's all for Raven News.